we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show, this one. I mean, it goes like from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga, from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the line to what we call, once again, Fort Benning, and big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in, just for good measure. And that's just the radio. Then there's all of y'all out there watching it live online on Facebook, X, YouTube, Rumble, and our website, rightsidemedia.org, and those of y'all who podcast the show, too. So bottom line is, we love you. We appreciate you. This show is only here because of y'all, so thank you very much for that. All right, you guys. Hey, listen, we're going to this thing we like to do once a week. It's Friday. It's halfway through hour number two. I totally just lay aside all the politics and the dippers that I got, and we turn to a segment in which our very own JP, who is like a savant on sports, lays out for us what we call JP on Sports, and he has his very own sound effect, courtesy of Sorority Girls at Auburn.
JP on Sports!
Still my favorite. I love it. All right. Round one is called The Three and Out. He's got top three stories of sports. Hit it, dude.
Well, we have an NBA champion. The Thunder beat the Pacers in Game 7 last week, and it's... The Pacers were not able to rally after Halliburton, their star player, went down with a torn Achilles in, I believe, the first quarter. So it was unfortunate that that was the outcome, kind of an asterisk a little bit by that. But still, I think the Thunder were the best team all year, so I think it's definitely still a well-deserved ring for the Thunder, who had a massive rebuild. I think, only 3 years ago, they were like the last team in the league, and through drafts and trades, they were able to rebuild and get to a championship level team. So props to a small market team like the Thunder to be able to go and rebuild that greatly and come up with a ring. It's very impressive. So yeah, props to the Thunder.
Outstanding. That was a quick one.
Oh, yeah. I got meteor ones. Don't worry.
You got meteor ones?
Yeah.
Not meteors as in screaming
no,
in
no,
on.
No,
okay,
like
yeah,
more
gotcha.
Meaty ones, yeah.
All right. Go for it, man.
Well,
what's number two?
I'm on the same lines here. We got the NBA draft ended last night. We got the Jahni Broome from Auburn was drafted in the second round. Dylan Cardwell was he didn't get drafted, but he signed with the Kings after the draft. And then Alabama players, we have Mark Sears signing with the Bucks, and then you have Grant Nelson signing with the Nets, still Chris Youngblood signed with the Thunder. However, if you thought that ESPN was going to be able to talk about the NBA draft without talking about race, then you were you would be sorely mistaken. I wanted to read this quote, but actually I have a short clip, if you don't mind, of this ESPN.
You're inserting audio.
The ESPN guy, I figured his own words would be better than mine.
ESPN, so. Take it.
Good. However, we're all adults. We can have a real life conversation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Last time I checked, we still live in America,
yeah.
Right? Cooper Flagg is a white guy, maybe the best white American prospect since Larry Bird, right? Let's not act as if we don't live in America and we're not seeing what's happening with Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. Cooper Flagg is going to be an instant impact player in the NBA. I think Danny will agree. He is ready to go. That kid could play right now. If he's nearly as good as people expect, I think when it comes to intrigue, actual intrigue that people are talking about day to day, no one's going to be more intriguing, get more eyeballs than what Cooper Flagg's doing in Dallas.
Danny, what do you
Because he's white. Cooper Flagg being a white player, he's going to be intrigued.
So that's why he's a standout?
Apparently because he's white. Yes.
Come on.
This is the same guy who said Caitlin Clark being so popular is a sign of white fragility. That exact guy. So it's Cooper Flagg, who was drafted number one overall last night, rightfully so. Like, he was by far the best player in college basketball. Wasn't even close. But he takes away from Cooper Flagg's moment because he's going to be a star, not because of his play, not because of how great of a basketball player it is. No, it's because he's white, and because, you know, Phil, we live in America, and white players are obviously more popular than black players, which...
Well, hey.
LeBron James, Steph Curry.
Come on.
James, like, do I need to keep going down the list of, like, if you're good, you're popular, no matter what skin color you are. But this is why I don't even watch ESPN anymore, because they virtue signal every chance they get, and it's they have very few people who will actually talk about the play. It's all politics, virtue signaling, and it's nonsense.
But he did prelim it by saying, "Can we have an adult conversation?"
Oh, okay, yeah, we can have an adult conversation and say that Cooper Flagg is going to be popular because he's white, of course.
That's unreal.
It just I'd like to say I'm shocked to hear this from ESPN, but it's ESPN's, I think, dying because of this. You know, stick to the sports, okay? Like, talk about Cooper Flagg and how good he is as a player, not his skin color. If I'm Cooper Flagg, I'd be very annoyed that they're trying to steal my moment for saying I'm only going to be popular because of my skin color.
Well, so I got to ask, though. I didn't hear the rest of the interview. Did anybody take him to task on that?
Of course not.
Or they let it ride?
No.
I mean, they just let that ride.
The rest of the people on the panel are people who agree with them.
Nodding their heads.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Golly. That's obnoxious.
Very annoying.
Okay.
However, not surprising.
There you have it. All right. That's two. What's three?
Well, we are coming up on the end of Pride Month, thank God. I did my podcast on this. That was going to be coming out on Monday, but I thought it would be good to reminisce on how the sports world handled Pride Month this past month. And so the only pro sports league that is in full swing during Pride Month is MLB. NBA was wrapping up at the end, so it's not really fair to, you know, look how what they did. But the MLB is the team you look at, you know, or the league you look at of, you know, that they are in the midpoint of their season. And there was a decline in the amount of teams that participated in Pride Month this year. If I remember correctly, at the top of my head, I think only 11 of 30 teams participated in like Pride events throughout the year. But I think I mentioned last week how the Mets put up the Pride flag during the national anthem and showed it waving in all its glory, I guess. It's whatever you think of Pride, I think that's equivalent to like showing a Russian flag during the national anthem, showing a Chinese flag in the national anthem. Any flag that's not the American flag during the national anthem is embarrassing and should be mocked openly. But ever, like I said, they lost 7 straight games after that, so I think karma got them anyways. But also, I mentioned last week about Clayton Kershaw writing the Genesis 9:12-16 verse because he was forced to wear a rainbow flag hat from the Dodgers. But he's gonna, you know, he's a public Christian and was able to write the verse on his hat to show, you know, God's promise with the rainbow, part of taking the rainbow back. But I think we're actually winning the culture war with this because I haven't seen, and granted, it may just be my social media algorithms being a conservative, but I feel like year after year Pride events are getting mocked more and more in the public space for leagues and teams that across the board force their players to participate in Pride events like Christians. I don't have a problem if you're a player and, you know, you may be a gay player and you do something to express Pride Month individually. Sure, I don't care. I mean, I don't have to agree with it. You know, kind of like what Colin Kaepernick did with the knee. Like, I don't have to agree with it, but he can do whatever he wants. I think I have a problem with the teams like the Dodgers who force their players to wear rainbow hats.
Yeah.
Like, the forcing your players to participate in something, and it's almost like they're so arrogant that they don't think any of their players disagree with their virtue signaling. But like I said, we're seeing a decline in it, but I'd like to see, I think it's a culture win for us if we're seeing teams, you know, participate in it less. I don't think teams should force their players to participate in anything politically or culturally. It shouldn't happen.
I wonder, and I'm asking this because the lawyer side of me just kicked in. I wonder if these guys have anything in their contract that says if there are promotional or you know, theme events like that, that they have to participate, if that was in their contract. And then at the same time, did they even have the right to negotiate that out of their contract?
I really doubt it. If it is in their contract, it definitely shouldn't be. But the whole uniform thing, it's just, I don't know. It's like, you wouldn't ask if you had any Muslim players participate in eating like pork before a game or something. Like, it's kind of along the same lines of forcing people to go against their faith. And it's, I don't know, it deserves to be called. And granted, it is the Dodgers and the Mets who are in LA and New York, very liberal cities. But, you know, hopefully with the numbers across the board going down and them openly being called out and Clayton Kershaw having to, you know, protest on his hat, like, I don't want to be wearing that. I'm being forced to wear this. Hopefully it can start to go down. And I know the MLB will not force teams to not force their players to participate in something. I wish they would. But who knows? Maybe you know, the years go on, we've got the Dodgers and the Mets as the only two teams left that are doing, you know, stuff like this, and they realize, you know, oh, well, maybe we should stop. Who knows? We'll see.
Wow.
But I do think it's good to look back because, like I said, I don't remember a year like this year that it was openly called out of, you know, stuff like Clayton Kershaw, and I think we're winning the culture war with this.
I agree with you. I think we are. In fact, I was thinking, compared to the last few years,
yep,
this one didn't feel like as impactful. Like, I didn't feel like every time I turned around, I was getting slapped with a rainbow flag.
Yeah. I mean, granted, we had the Iran stuff and a bunch of other news stories that dominated, but still, if Clayton Kershaw had written that on his hat, like, even 2 years ago, he would be publicly, like, canceled. I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of people sticking up for him, actually. So
probably a hero now.
Yes. Yeah, rightfully so.
All right, dude. Three and out. Perfect timing. You just ran right up against the clock, so take it to the break. We'll take the break right now. It's round one, JP on sports. That was a three and out. Coming right back, we move to the next phase, which is called the two-minute warning. I got a timer, and we got a buzzer, and we'll see what he's got. 2 minutes at his whack. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're going back to a round two of JP on sports. So let me get the timer ready, JP, because this one's called the two-minute warning. We've got a timer and a buzzer, and you got 2 minutes on each and every one. So first one, go.
Well, the College World Series is done. LSU won the national championship, so they are back and reestablishing themselves, or let me say, reminding everybody the powerhouse that LSU is in baseball. They beat Coastal Carolina in two games, swept them. But there's a funny part of the final game. So I think it was after 11 pitches, the first 11 pitches of the game, Coastal Carolina's head coach and first base coach were ejected from the game. But the funny part of it is, so, you know, Coastal Carolina's coach, you know, stepped up out of the dugout and was yelling at the umpire, and the umpire ejected him right away, quick trigger. So then the Coastal Carolina coach, you know, he's tossed, got nothing left to lose. He's going to go get his words into the umpire face to face. But as he's doing that, the one of the other umpires comes in to try to cut him off and trips over his own feet and falls on his butt. But for some reason, he got embarrassed and decided to imply that the Coastal Carolina coach pushed him to the ground and then got up and, you know, is now trying to imply that the Coastal Carolina coach should be suspended the first 10 games for bodily checking an umpire. When, if you go watch the clip, the guy tripped over himself and got embarrassed and is now trying to blame the Coastal Carolina coach.
So
this has implications on the next season, by the way, because like I said, forcibly pushing an umpire is a suspension.
Sure.
But if you go in the post-game press conference, the Coastal Carolina coach said that he shouldn't be held responsible for another man's unathleticism. So, yeah, that was hilarious in my opinion.
So the Chanticleers got rowdy.
The Chanticleers got rowdy and got ejected 11 pitches into the national championship game.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, but anyways, you know, like I said, LSU, SEC, you know, staying dominant in college baseball. So what else?
And there it is. Right up to the buzzer. Chanticleer's getting rowdy. Can a Chanticleer get rowdy?
They're the Fighting Gamecocks. That's what they do.
Okay. Round two. I mean, next 2 minutes, go.
So everybody remembers the Riley Gaines, Simone Biles beef that had on Twitter. What was it, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, where Simone Biles called out Riley Gaines for calling out Minnesota state championship in softball being dominated by a male pitcher. And Simone Biles, you know, called out Riley Gaines, but then body shamed Riley Gaines, which is very hypocritical and kind of funny, actually. But so now we've got, what, like I said, a week and a half, 2 weeks removed, and a PR apology from Simone Biles. Now Simone Biles has deleted her Twitter.
Her whole account?
Her whole account has been deleted after this. She couldn't handle the heat. And let me just say, if you're going to call out somebody like Riley Gaines and, you know, call her a bunch of things and then body shame her, you got to be able to take the criticism that comes with that. Okay, so clearly Simone Biles was batting out of her league and was not able to take the criticism. And like I said, her PR firm had to do damage control with an apology, but deleting her account It's like, come on. Like, you're vindicating everything Riley Gaines said when you're deleting your account. So I think it's fair to say Riley Gaines took the W on this. But not only the W, where Riley Gaines taking the W. I mentioned earlier about, you know, how we're winning the culture battle with pride stuff. Yeah, I think we just won. This is another culture win in the transgender battle in sports. Because Simone Biles, who is not a nobody, very popular, called out another, you know, famous person on this regard and had lost so badly that she had to delete her account on X. So I think that's symbolic of just more winning. And clearly she got, you know, beat up on so much by people who agree with Riley Gaines. So clearly, you know, Riley Gaines has the majority of the support in this, I would say. But hopefully moving forward, people will think twice before taking absurd stances on this.
Yes, rule of thumb for social media is you block the porn, but not the scorn.
Screenshots are forever. And whatever you say, people will remember and call you out on it.
And there it is. All right. Round, third one, 2-minute warning. Start the clock, go.
We have some shots fired here in the college football world. So football player Thomas Castellanos, who is the new Florida State quarterback, transferred in from Boston College. You know, Alabama and Florida State play week one this upcoming season. And Thomas Castellanos decided to say during a media day that Alabama isn't scared of him anymore because they don't have Nick Saban to protect them anymore. He says, quote, they don't have Nick Saban to save them and that Alabama doesn't scare him anymore. I'm speaking as an Alabama fan here. I'm glad he said that because that screenshot will be brought up when Alabama plays Florida State later this year. And he better hope that Florida State demolishes Alabama, because if Florida State loses, then he has completely made a fool of himself. Part of me respects it. It's like, okay, you know, you're
a little trash talk.
However, like I said, you know, screenshots are forever. This will be brought up if Florida State just had a 2-10 season, or 3-11, something like an awful season. Florida State is not in a position to, you know, trash talk anybody at the moment. I know Alabama missed the playoffs, but 9-3 over 3-11, I think that's or 3-9, whatever the record was. Yeah, it's funny to me that Florida State thinks they're in a position to trash talk.
He's just feeling big because he got picked up by a bigger school out of the portal.
Yep, out of Boston College, which, if I remember correctly, I think Boston College actually beat Florida State last year. So I don't know. It's funny to me. I'm sure he probably got a talking to by his coach after that for speaking up.
Well, I guess it's better than having a quarterback who's got no moxie at all.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's. Hey, I got Gim Prof for guts there, so there's that.
All right, there it is. And the buzzer, and reset the clock. And do you have time? Yes, you do. Go.
I got about 30 seconds here. We got a big UFC card this weekend. I'm kind of upset because I'll be on an 8-hour flight to Paris during this fight.
Oh, you're upset because you're going to Paris. Sorry.
Well, okay, let me rephrase that. I'm upset that I have to be on an 8-hour plane flight, and I hate flying, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm also flying while my favorite fighter and one of the biggest cards of the year for the UFC will be happening while I'm thousands of feet up in the air, and I'm praying that their plane has Wi-Fi. But Charles Oliveira is fighting Ilia Topuria this upcoming weekend for the vacant lightweight title. This is just a massive, massive fight, and two of the best in the world of Charles Oliveira and Ilia Topuria. I don't think this fight goes past like round number two with these two. We got the Charles Oliveira, who has the record for most finishes in the UFC, versus undefeated Ilia Topuria. Somebody's got to budge, so I'm interested to see if the plane has Wi-Fi. Who will budge?
If the plane has Wi-Fi, you're in, and you'll be shouting from your row.
Yeah, probably.
All right, that's it. JP on sports. Good job, man. Great job mixing culture and sports. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, hour number 3 on a Friday, coming up.